Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hi, and thank you for joining us today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining us today is Chancellor Emeritus John White. John is a former president of the Institute of Industrial Engineers, author, corporate leader, chancellor, dean, educator, engineer, and consultant. Thank you for joining us today, John.
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate you having me.
So really excited to get into, want to talk about your book, Why It Matters. But let's start off with just tell us, what does success mean to you?
That's, it has changed significantly over my career, Phil. When I first started out, it was all about me, mine. I measured success, I think, probably in number of awards and so forth. My parents were public school teachers, so I grew up with educators. I majored in engineering. Off I went to be an engineer with the Eastman Kodak Company at their chemicals, fibers, plastics plant in Tennessee called Tennessee Eastman Company. And I felt like my measure of success was I was going to be the CEO of the company within a few short years, you know?
Yeah.
And then interestingly, after I was there just for a short time, I realized that, well, I really want to go to graduate school. And in order to fund graduate school, I had an opportunity to teach. And when I walked into my first class to teach, I realized, wow, this is what I was put on this earth to do. I mean, I was married to a high school teacher. My sister was a high school teacher. My parents were teachers, but I was an engineer. And so everything just suddenly changed. All of this stuff that I had envisioned about me, I just threw that out and off I went. I was in academe. And so there, the measures of success are so well understood by faculty members. You got to do your research. You got to publish the papers. You got to get the awards. You do all. So I was doing all of these things. And I was very involved in the Industrial Engineering Professional Society and all. And then one day, I guess it was actually it was either toward the end of my time at Georgia Tech as Dean of Engineering, or when I made the move to go back to my undergraduate alma mater, the University of Arkansas, to be its chancellor, that I was sitting in the office and I looked up on the wall and I had all of these plaques and things up there and honorary doctorates and best paper and award-winning books and all this stuff. And I thought, is this all there is to it? Surely there's more to life than this. And out of that, I went through a process, and it took me, didn't occur just sort of like that. It took over time. I realized that I wanted my net worth to be measured not in dollars and cents, but in lives impacted. And that as a teacher, I had a great opportunity for impacting lives. And so the focus about the students really became a much bigger deal for me. It was all about the students with the university for me. And so that began. And so then I went off. Actually, now that I'm saying this, I realize when it happened, I was at Georgia Tech, and it was before I went to the National Science Foundation to head up the engineering directorate. And that 3 years really helped make that transformation too, because I could see in the data that we as a nation were not going to be able to compete with China and India and a number of other countries if we didn't get all of our bright people engaged in pulling on the rope. And we had too many, particularly women and underrepresented minorities, not getting engaged in engineering and science. And so that became a big deal for me. And so when I went back to Georgia Tech as Dean of Engineering, that was a big part of what I was trying to do, was to reach out and be more inclusive and get more people involved in engineering. Then to go back to my undergraduate alma mater, I realized then, and by the way, by this time, I'm now on like 5 corporate boards. I'm on the corporate board of directors for Eastman Chemical, Russell, the athletics wear company, Motorola, Logility, which is a logistics software firm, J.B. Hunt Transport Company, and serving on those boards, I realized that, again, that the measure of success that I had was going to be how could I make those organizations better, and then as a leader, how could I advance the people I was leading? How could I help them achieve theirs? And so then I had this chance when I finally stepped down as chancellor and returned to the faculty and started teaching a leadership course. And I would ask the guest leaders who would come and meet with my class and say, how do you define success? And Governor Mike Beebe at the time, he defined success as being happy in what you do. And I thought, how interesting, being happy. But then I picked up, and one of the first books that I used in the course was a book called Leading with Integrity by Alan Culp and Peter Ray. And they start out, and what are they doing? They're quoting Aristotle. And Aristotle addressed the question, how do you define success? And his answer was happiness. I thought, now I doubt that Governor Beebe had read Aristotle, and I don't think he came to that answer because of that, but I think that's what he meant. And Aristotle says the goal of human life is to be good, and the measure of good is your ability to realize your potential, that you have become what you were meant to do and become what you were meant to be. And I thought, now that's interesting, because Donnie Smith, who was the chairman, he was the president and CEO of Tyson Foods at the time, when he met with my class, he said that, I said, how do you define success? He said, your success is defined by whether or not you have understood your purpose and you have patterned your life to fulfill it. And that made a lot of sense to me. And then, of course, I'm reminded it back several years before, my son had given me a copy of Bob Buford's Halftime, and the subtitle on it was Moving from Success to Significance. And so for me, the definition of success has evolved over my career to the point that now my measure of success is, am I making a difference in the lives of the people I touch, and have I made a difference in the organizations that I've led? That making a difference is, and yet back in scouting and Boy Scouts, what were you taught? Leave the campsite better than you found it. Mm-hmm. That is really what leadership, I think, is all about. Where you define the campsite is the organization, but all the people who were there in the camp with you. Mm-hmm. That they're all better, that you made a difference, that having been on this earth for a very small amount of time, that you were able to make a difference. That's, to me, what success is all about.
Yeah, so I want to dig into something you talked about just now, and then also in your book, and that's about a balance. You know, and you see people, in, especially in the corporate world, and you say that individual is successful, they have the income, they have the notoriety, they look like they're doing well, and you've even talked about in your book, they go through divorce after divorce after divorce because they don't have the balance in their life. And then you look at what happened with COVID, and in the post-pandemic job market, there's men between 35 and 44 who have yet to return back to the workforce. It's a major problem, hundreds of thousands of them. And I wonder if some of that is they got ripped out of this matrix and they said, I don't want to go back to that life. You know, they're doing driving for food delivery, they're doing little odd jobs, or they're not working at all, and they're just saying, I don't want to go back to that. And do you think some of that is they didn't have the balance in their corporate life, and now they don't have balance because they're saying, well, I want to go the other route. I don't want to go back to that. Yeah. And we're seeing some of that post pandemic. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, and that leads right into the expression that you found there in the book, the tyranny of the or, that too often I think people think it's that we're faced with binary choices. It's either this or that. I think that actually what we should do is to try to change or into and. Mm-hmm. Find a way to accomplish sort of both of those things. And that's what balance really means. And there's in the book, I discuss polarities, and that polarities, and what's happened in today's world is just very polarized. We've just suddenly gone from one extreme to the other. And what we need to do is to find middle ground, to seek the middle. Well, that's going to be the same for individuals. The issue about balancing family and career, that one of the things that we did in the leadership course was to study one of the Harvard Business School case studies, the Alex Montana case study, in which this young man was just going gangbusters, and suddenly he was going to get a promotion that would lead to even more travel international. But meanwhile, in the home, he had a situation there that, golly, if he did that, would this lead to divorce? And so we took that case study. It was interesting as the students studied it, how the women in the class in general tended to say he should take the promotion. And the guys in the class tended in general to say, no, he should forego the commotion and invest himself at home. It was just kind of an 180 degree from what most people would expect in that. But then my response was, wait a minute. It's not an either or. There can be a way to have both. And so we had just had, as one of the guest leaders, Shelley Simpson from J.B. Hunt. And she's now the president at J.B. Hunt. She wasn't at the time. She was an executive vice president. But what she and her husband did was they brought one of her cousins in to become a nanny with the children to help do that. So there's not just the cookie cutter approach about one's got to give it up or whatever. Now, Mary Pat McCarthy, who was a vice chairman of KPMG, her husband, who was in banking, became a stay-at-home dad and did that. Fine. But it's not usually just it's either this or that. No, let's see if we can't find another option here. And I think that a number of these individuals realize, gee, I haven't been putting family as high in priority as I should. And so they're enjoying that. And we'll see how long that goes. I don't think that it's necessarily anyone's made a mistake. I think they're making their choices. And over time, I want those choices to be made by the family and what's in the best interest of the family. In my generation coming up, many people would say the job is a means to an end, where others would say the job is the end. That in too many individuals in my generation defined who they were by the title on their business card. Mm-hmm. That's when you would ask, tell me about you, the first thing they'd tell you is what's on their business card. It wouldn't tell us about them. Tell me about you, the person. Who are you? What are you about? Because they identified themselves with their work. That was it. Now, this was true of what Peter Drucker called the knowledge workers, where as opposed to the blue collar workers, the ones, the factory workers. When you got into management and all of that, those people in management, the expectation was the job is the end in itself. I mean, you have achieved it. You have achieved success, and it's measured by what's on your title. Well, fortunately, we've moved beyond that. And I think a lot of that is because of the change overall in society, where the service economy we're in now, as opposed to the blue collar knocking out the widgets and all of that we were in back 40 years ago. has led to some of this. I don't think we can blame it on COVID, but what COVID did was it created the need for individuals to work from home, and they really like it. So now there's the challenge that businesses face. What are we going to do with all of these buildings we've got and all these offices that are not being used and all of that? And then we're going through a transition. Mm-hmm. It's going to take, I think, several years for that transition to occur. But people are sorting out for them, how do I measure success? They're going through right now what I went through when I was sitting there at Georgia Tech in my office and looking at the walls and asking, is this all there is that life is about? So I think it's a natural thing. It's a normal thing. It's just been accelerated, I think, because of COVID, Phil. It's going to be interesting. It'll be my grandchildren that will figure this out. My generation is not, and I don't think it's going to be my children's, but it's going to be the grandchildren who are going to work this out, and that's what they're doing now. So it's going to have a transformation on industry, and the paradigms that people have used, they're all changing. It's changing fast. So is there any way to go back to the way it was? I don't think so. And I don't think it's necessarily would be healthier to go back to the way it was either. I think what we're going to do is we're going to come to a solution that's going to wind up being better than what is now and what was then. But we're evolving as a society.
Yeah, and that's what progress is, isn't it? Yeah. So there's this common theme I noticed with your book, and it's kind of this adaptiveness that leadership needs to have, you know, be it putting on different hats or different attitudes, yeah, depending on their roles. And you even talked about it just with the instead of an or looking at more of an and strategy, mm-hmm, and that sort of adaptiveness. Being that you've worked with numerous successful leaders, are there any common traits that you're observing that are helping propel them to the top of their field?
I think that I have a chapter there called Keys to A's. And it starts with attitude and it ends with ability. And there are all these other words starting with the letter A that are in between.
Yeah.
And I think the key is about its attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, I was meeting with a person when I was on the board of a particular company. This individual had been the chief financial officer and was terminated in the company by the CEO. The CEO tended to have a list of you're on my A list or you're on my B list. And if you can, and the movement was always from the A list to the B list, it would happen pretty fast. And there was no moving back toward the A list. I mean, it didn't take much at all for that CEO who thought you were the best thing in the world to suddenly think you weren't worth anything. And it would just switch very fast. And what this individual yesterday at lunch told me, he said, you know, you might not remember this, but after I was fired, he said, that evening I was at home with my wife and I was very, very down, depressed, and wondering what was going to happen. And you called me and you told me that you were disappointed at the decision that the CEO had made. You thought that I was doing a great job and that if I ever needed a reference, that you would always be there for me. Well, I hadn't remembered that in the luncheon yesterday until he said it. And then I remembered I had done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him, I said, you know, it's interesting that you would mention that because Greg Brown, who's the chairman and CEO of Motorola Solutions, at one point before the spin off the cell phone business and all, when it was one corporation, we were having a tough time. And the board was meeting, and I could tell that Greg was really, really stressed. And I mean, he was losing weight. It was tough times for him. And I just said in the board meeting, hey, I think we need to take a little time out. I think I need to go up and give Greg a big hug. He needs a hug. Well, that made such a difference for Greg and to the members of the board to recognize that, hey, we're in this together. He's having a tough time. And let's just give him all the support that we can give. There comes a time, I think, when leaders who have really done well and have moved up are able to understand when it's time to give someone a hug, but also when it's time to give someone a kick in the pants, that you're able to know that, and you're able to do that, but you also are not afraid to let your humanity show. It was interesting with my class that as the guest leaders would come and meet with the students, and we would have 15 of them over the course of a semester, invariably there would be 3 to 4 of those guest leaders who would be in tears because they would be talking about the challenges, the difficult decisions that had to be made in the process of leadership. But then they would also talk about the joys and the benefits and the satisfaction of being able to help people, to help the organization, and to move things forward. There's a lot of things that a leader must do. And I believe the leadership secret sauce is, first, is be able to listen, to really listen, and to learn from that. And then love the people you're leading, then go about leading. So it's the listen, to learn, to love, and then lead. And the individuals who I've been around that I would say are the best leaders are really good at listening. And they don't just listen with their ears, they listen with their eyes. And they're reading the body language that's coming forth when they're meeting with someone. To have empathy, to care about people. Teddy Roosevelt is credited with saying, no one will care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's not been proven that Teddy Roosevelt actually said that, but it's a great saying. I think it actually absolutely applies. I think that whatever successes I've had in leadership has been because people knew I cared, that I cared about them, that I wanted to do whatever I could to help them achieve what their goals were. My measure of success was not about me, but rather how successful they were. I didn't want to be the best leader of a team. I wanted to be the leader of the best team. And that meant that I had to do all that I could to help those people I was leading achieve their goals. That when I was offered the position of chancellor at the University of Arkansas by the president of the system, I said, I have 2 conditions. What's that? I said, one, I'll continue to teach. He said, I don't see how you can teach and be chancellor. I said, then I'll say I can be chancellor. He said, well, why? I said, well, there are 3 reasons. Number one, it's going to send a message to the faculty about my commitment to the teaching mission because I'm going to be trying to increase our research reputation as a university. Number two, it keeps me in touch with the kids because for me, that's why I'm in the university. It's all about the students for me. And the third, the most important reason, it'll be the best 3 hours of my week. If I have those 3 hours, I might be able to put up with all the other stuff I got to put up with. And so they said, well, what's the second reason? I said, I'll hear from 6 families. They'll support my goal of making University of Arkansas the reputation in academics as strong as its reputation has been in athletics. And he said, what? I said, yep. There are 6 families. Who are they? And I told him who the 6 were. He said, what if they want to all do it? I said, I'm not coming. Why? Because we're going to have private support because we cannot achieve what we have to achieve here on the basis of tax support and tuition support alone. It's going to have a lot of private support. And I've got to know I've got a shot at pulling this off. And so he said, oh, I don't know how long it'll take. I said, well, I don't have to make the decision. You let me know when you know. He did. And so I called my son in to, we were at our vacation home in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And I said, John, sit down. I got to tell you something. What's that? Mom and I are going to Arkansas. Really? What are you going to do about your football and basketball tickets at Georgia Tech, Dad? I said, I'm going to continue to get them. You can use them. He said, good. Congratulations, Dad.
That's so all he was concerned
he
about.
He had his priorities. He had his priorities set. I knew. But, you know, it's really that, that's the thing to me, is that the successful leaders will listen. They really listen and learn. And it, you can... I can look back over the boards I've been on and the CEOs that we've had, and you could rank order them, I think, in effectiveness based on their abilities to listen.
Well, and I like what you said about listening with your eyes, and you, because even when you're communicating, you're listening to your audience.
Yes.
Right? Because yes. You talked about how effective communication is how well the message is received.
Yes.
Or another version of that I've heard is the meaning of my communication is the response I get.
Yeah.
Right. And understanding your audience and whether they're receiving the message in the way that you're intending it to is really what communication is about.
Yeah. And I think that, and in fact, I've asked a number of leaders that about various world leaders that they've been around, and which ones did they thought were the most effective? And the ones that were most effective didn't just have a send button. They also had a receive button. Mm-hmm. Said it, those instances where they're around them, and if that particular leader thought he or she was the smartest person in the room, you knew that was not going to be an effective leader. How well did they listen? And that's the thing that calls on you having some humility to recognize you're not the one with all the answers. You need to be the one with all the questions, not the answers. If you're the smartest person in the room, you've made a huge mistake. You've surrounded yourself with stupid people. You know, you don't want to do that. You got to surround yourself with people who are brighter than you, who know more than you, who can help you, for goodness sakes, who can be strong where you're weak. And then the leader who says, I have no weaknesses, will soon have no followers. You know, absolutely. That's the thing.
Well, John, I want to thank you for your time today. For everyone listening, where can they find out more about you? Where can they get your book and find out what you got going on?
Well, in fact, I've got to tell you, Phil, that when I submitted the manuscript to the publisher, they said, if we publish this, it'd be 625 pages in length. You've got to cut it in half. That was like deciding which of my children I wanted to put sacrificed. I said, oh, really? So I worked hard on it. And so I took 7 chapters out of it, and I've posted it out on a website. It's johnawhitejr.com/whyitmatters. And if you go there, you'll find a lot of supplementary material, but also there's a sample chapter in the book, and in a way that you can order it and everything else. But it's also on page 287 in the book is the password to get to the bonus material and everything. But it's going to be pretty easy to figure out. I'm not going to just be too worried about that. Just go. I'll tell you, just between us, the password is Leadership Matters More, with 3 capital letters, the L on the leadership, the M on the matters, and the M on the more. And that'll be the password to get you to the bonus material there on the website. But it's just chock full of stuff, including podcasts that I've been involved in. They did an interview of me after 10 years as being chancellor, and that I've got a YouTube channel, and that's connected to the website. So just go there and you can find whatever you'd want to find. And if that doesn't do it, then just send me an email. And that's jawhite@uark.edu. And we'll connect that way. But if I can be of any help, I want to do it.
Yeah, and I thought it was a great book. Entertaining to read, great stories throughout. I love the little caricatures of the people throughout the stories. There's little comic strips.
Yeah.
You're self-depreciating at time, you know, you don't hold back from it. honestly, a really entertaining and educational book. And so anybody that, you know, wants to learn more about leadership, improve their leadership skills, or help train their team on leadership, Why It Matters, Reflections on Practical Leadership. Thank you so much for your time today, John, and thank you for listening to the Success Is podcast.
Thank you so much, Bill. Good luck. Take care now.